Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice. The mission of The Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges.
Hello and welcome to the Reasonable Voices News Talk Radio program. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, and our Reasonable Voice today is Ginger Gentile, director of the amazing documentary film Exclusion U, which will be released on Friday, June 23rd, this year, 2023, and will be available on various on-demand platforms, including iTunes, Amazon, and possibly Google Play. Ms. Gentile's New York premiere of Exclusion U takes place at Lincoln Center's Eleanor Monroe Film Center on Thursday, June 8, 2023. Before I continue with a bit of background, or maybe I should call it foreshadowing, welcome Ginger Gentile to the Reasonable Voices News Talk program, and how are you today?
I'm very good, Marcello. Thank you for having me on the air.
My pleasure, my pleasure. Well, Exclusion U is a documentary on how Ivy League universities hoard billions of dollars while refusing to expand enrollments. Most of us remember the breaking news of Hollywood celebrities bribing university officials in order to get their children accepted into renowned universities. However, judging from Ginger Gentile's documentary film Exclusion U, that was only the natural extension of a far greater American higher education nightmare. The Ivy League universities, seven of which were founded before the American Revolution, by the wealthy, perhaps to preserve, protect, and defend the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant colonial class. But the Ivy League was, and arguably still is, an athletic conference league created in 1954. Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Brown, Columbia, Dartmouth, Cornell, and the University of Pennsylvania. With $193 billion in endowments, most students they accept come from the top 1% income producers in the country, certainly more than they accept from any lesser income brackets. And our Reasonable Voice today, director Ginger Gentile, is here to explain it, all of it, to us. So, Ginger, welcome again.
Thank you so much for having me, Marcello.
My pleasure. Well, you know, usually when I have film directors on, filmmakers and whatever, since I do that too quite often, I talk about how the movie was made, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that today because I can vouch, having seen it three times, it is beautifully crafted, and all of those rules of filmmaking are observed, and you will be fascinated by all that you see. But I want to talk about what you're going to hear, and that's why our guest is here today. Maybe I've conjectured a little too much so far, but Ginger will correct me. Ivy League universities are private institutions that receive public money. And according to your documentary film, they are creating a circular network of wealth and power fed by and feeding the elite of political, judicial, and corporate leadership positions. So, feel free to comment on that, but my first question is, how then does anyone get into Harvard?
So, Marcella, that is a great question, and it is very hard to get into Harvard. Harvard accepts around 3% of the applicants. And what surprised me the most when I was making Exclusion U is that most of the people who apply to Harvard or any Ivy League school, about 90%, are qualified to be there. I assume that maybe 10 or 20% are qualified, and the rest, I don't know, send in the resume as the application as a stretch or as a joke. What admissions officers said is 90% could be successful at these schools. So what the admissions officers say they do is that they shape a class. They look for diversity in where people are from. So they want students from every state, from a variety of countries, different social classes. They want a jock. They want a cello player. They want a philosopher. And what this can do when you begin to pick people to shape a class is it can hide and make very obscure the real reasons why people are entering a school like Harvard. Mm. And in a lot of cases, they are entering due to family connections, such as they are a legacy student, meaning their parents or grandparents went to the school. And another shocking fact I found out, the United States is the only country in the world with legacy admission. Mm. Not even Great Britain, with all of their monarchies and royalties and dukes and duchesses, they don't have legacy admission. There's a reason why the princes did not go to Oxford or Cambridge. They didn't have the grades. So the short answer is, it's very hard, and it's especially hard for a student who, let's say, is very smart but doesn't have a story, such as overcoming a lot of personal hardship or also a story of extreme family wealth. So in a lot of ways, the middle class is really getting squeezed out.
Hmm. Interesting. So they're sort of looking at both extremes, economic extremes, but not the middle. And of course, the middle is by far the largest majority, I assume. Is that part of the point you're making?
So that is the point. So the middle class is getting squeezed out, and that's in part because we do track how many low-income students go to these schools. We track them as students who receive Pell Grants. And schools were criticized for having almost like just a few percentage points of Pell Grant students about 20 years ago, so they have increased those numbers. They're still a very small minority, but they don't want to decrease the number of wealthy students. The number of wealthy students has also grown. Mm. So you have to squeeze out the middle class. Mm. Now, a possible solution to this would be to admit more students, which, as we show in the film Exclusion U, there are the funds to do so. There is simply not the will.
Now, yeah, and it's a loaded question. I mean, I know it's yeah. But I'm going to ask it anyway, because I'm sure everyone's wondering, well, why not? If they've got all this endowment money, why don't they open up to more students?
So there's a few reasons why they are not opening up to more students. The first is that, just like Prada handbags, the Ferraris don't want to be for everybody. Part of the appeal is that they are hard to get into. They are exclusive.
Mm.
So the more exclusive you get, the more appealing the brand is. So we don't have brands based on actual education. Nobody measures how good the education at these schools are. It's based on how many students they reject. So that's like to put in perspective about charities, and these schools have charitable status. They don't have to pay taxes. It's like a homeless shelter saying, we're the best homeless shelter in the world because we reject 97% of the people who come to us.
Wow.
So it's a very perverse way of defining prestige. The other thing is, all of that money that they have in their endowments, while they're not using it to educate people, and I want to explain what an endowment is, because it's not a term everyone is familiar with.
Exactly. I was going to ask that.
When you make a donation to Harvard or Yale or Columbia or any school, let's say you would donate, just to keep it simple, $100. Harvard, Yale, or any school does not spend that $100. They put in their endowment,
mm-hmm.
and then they use the interest or the profit they make from the investments, and they invest in the stock market, bonds, and some crazier investments that the film gets into too. they only take whatever a small percentage of the interest of what the endowment earns. So you never touch the principal. So the endowment grows most years. If there's a huge downturn, it won't grow. But even during the pandemic, Harvard's endowment grew over by $20 billion in 1 year. So what's happening now, they don't want to spend it because they're not forced to spend it. Mm-hmm. But also, when you manage money, you get a fee.
Yes.
So you not only get a fee just to manage the money, which often is 2%, you also get a portion of the profits those investments make. So it's also, now this is completely legal what I'm about to say.
Okay.
You go to Harvard, you're a good business school student, and Harvard says, we want to give you $100 million to invest.
Mm.
And you say, oh, that's great, and here's my fee, and here's the fee of, you know, of the profit I make, and Harvard pays you that. And let's say you do well with the investment. You might say, Harvard, I'm so honored, and I love Harvard so much, I'm going to make a donation to Harvard.
Okay.
Because now my $100 million is $1 billion. So I'll give $100 million to Harvard. And Harvard says, oh, thank you so much. Can we make you a member of the board now? And you say, oh, that's very lovely. Thank you. This is all legal.
I see.
But this circular cycle is, it's an incentive to not increase its wealth because they are not stealing money from Harvard. They are taking fees. As anyone who invests, you pay a fee to the investment house.
Yes.
But these are huge amounts of money. So it cycles in. And then, of course, if you make a donation
mm-hmm.
to a school, they always say, we can't guarantee that your child gets in, but we'll look at that child a little more.
Mm-hmm.
So it encourages large donations. And the film, we say, now it's about $10 million to get noticed. But also what can happen is if you're a business person, you make a large donation to a school, you can also put in a word for your business colleagues' children. Imagine how nice it is to close the deal to say, hey, I know your kid's trying to get in to Yale. I just made a large donation. Let me talk to the people there and see what I can do.
Wow. Okay. So
it's all legal.
All legal. All legal.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You know, and I know that, but as you, when you explain it, of course, after I've seen your film, it has mm-hmm. a whole different, not only perspective, mm-hmm. but impact. Wow. We are talking, by the way, just to remind you again, of the documentary film, Exclusion You. So you do want to see that, and it's opening on January 8th at Lincoln Center, as we mentioned. One more quick question, if we can, and if we don't finish the answer, it's okay. We'll go to break, and then we'll come back to it. But
okay.
I'm loving this. I'm just sitting here, you know, going, wow, it's just washing all over me again.
Oh, thank you, Marcella.
Absolutely.
How long do I have to answer? No, answer.
You don't cut yourself off. If we need to cut in, it's not a problem. That's the one of the wonderful things about podcasts. But my question is, does grade point average even matter anymore? I mean, is 4.0 not enough, or what's the story with that? Or do they even think about
it? Sure. So that's a great question, Marcello. And most of the students who get in, even if they have, you know, legacy or donations, very few are not qualified. That does happen. There are cases of it. But for the most part, what you're talking about is you have 100 students who have a 4.0 or above GPA and 3 slots.
Mm.
Who gets in? So there are so many students who are applying to these schools, and also wealthy families now, their children will often apply to 20 schools because it's so competitive, giving them yet another advantage because each application fee is about $90. The schools care about grade point average and extracurriculars, but with so many students, how do you make the final cut? And it could be, well, their parent went to the school, their parent made a donation, you know, we think their parents might make a donation. So those play a huge factor. But one of the consequences of this for everybody, rich and poor students alike, is that this is a very stressful and opaque process. You can no longer say, I have a good chance of getting in into Yale, maybe not so much Harvard, and I think I'll really, like, it's just so confusing right now. We can't even know how the decisions are made, and this just puts a lot of stress on families and kids, and just increases the cost because it's created kind of an educational arms race, where kids now, who can afford it, do expensive extracurriculars, but also will pay for private college counselors on top of the college counselors they have already. So you're dealing with students who they might have three or four adults assisting them who are paid large sums of money to get them into these schools.
Wow. Usually I talk too much, but you're just leaving me speechless, and I think that's a wonderful thing. I tell you, let's take a short break while I sort of clear my head here a little. This is it's just amazing. Okay, we're going to take a short break. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, and our guest today is director Ginger Gentile, and her premiere of her film is what we're discussing, and its content is so powerful, and I think every American needs to hear it. Exclusion U is the title of the documentary. We'll be right back with its director, Ginger Gentile, after a short commercial break. Stay with us.
I love working with the fabulous Marcello Rolando with me on the other side of the camera, or microphone in this case. For years, Marcello was a splendid addition to the cast of Another World on NBC. He was the owner, manager, man in charge of Tops, our swanky restaurant in Bay City. And as a producer and director on the show, I got to see him more often than most and was thrilled to have him on board. I depended on him to take charge, which he did with aplomb. Our cast, including the lovely Linda Dano, Stephen Schnetzer, Charles Keating, all remarked how special he was to have there. He made everyone, regular cast members and guest actors alike, feel special and welcome. Marcello adds a touch of class to whatever he does, and we were thrilled to have him with us on our show for such a long time. He is so thoughtful now to reach out to his peers for a conversation about how we're all surviving this pandemic. It's a challenge, but with each other's help and support, we will survive with more stories to tell.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices News Talk radio program. My guest today is the director of the documentary film Exclusion U, Ginger Gentile. And we've been talking a lot about Harvard in particular, but we are going to talk about, I believe they're called the Ivies. Is that what people are calling them now, the Ivy League universities?
Yes, there's eight Ivy League universities: Harvard, Yale, Brown, Cornell, Columbia, Princeton, University of Pennsylvania.
Yes. Well, I know we talked briefly about the grade point average, and that was a great perspective you gave us. Perhaps the obvious question, but I'm going to ask it. With $193 billion, you did touch on this, and I'm glad you explained what an endowment is. It's not something a lot of Americans walk around talking about all the time. How do Ivy League universities actually spend their money without paying taxes?
So universities, and especially prestigious universities like the Ivy League, do spend money. They spend the money that their students pay in tuition. They spend the money they get in government grants. Other programs they run, like master's, certificate programs, food and housing. So they have a lot of money coming in, plus they have the money from the endowment. Mm. So what they will often spend it on are administrative staff. We show in the film there's three administrators per student at some of these schools. Mm-hmm. They will spend it on the campuses, acquiring artwork, of course the education as well. We don't want to, so the point is that these schools aren't spending any money.
Mm-hmm.
It's that they have so much more money they could be spending to really educate more people at a high level.
Gotcha. Okay. And what about the taxes part? I mean, that's covered, of course, in your documentary, that sometimes it's suggested that the Ivy League universities generously donate to the cities that in which they occupy, but they are not paying taxes, and what they generously donate is far less than they would be paying. I mean, enormously less than they would be paying if they were paying taxes. Expand on that for me.
Sure. So educational institutions in the U.S. are tax exempt, mm-hmm. the same way that charities are. But they are not required to act in the public good the same way charities are, although that is the assumption.
Mm-hmm.
So that means they are also exempt not only from income tax, business taxes, sales tax, but also property tax. Some of these schools own huge swaths of property. So Columbia University in New York, my alma mater, is buying up tons of land in Harlem and building new buildings. The same with the University of Pennsylvania, almost all of these schools. So they are major landowners, and every time they buy a piece of property, they take it off their tax roll. So that means that the neighbors of the school have to make up for it or have less services. And the situation is very acute, for example, in New Haven, where Yale is, because Yale is by far the biggest industry in New Haven.
Yes.
So you have the biggest employer who doesn't pay any property tax.
Yes, it's like a 60-40 spread, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. They're 40%, in your documentary, it stated, I think, the mayor, 40% of the people in the city of New Haven are paying taxes for the 100%, while Yale would be responsible for 60% of the taxes. Did I misunderstand that? Is that close?
Yes, you got that correct. So I forget the exact percentage, but Yale has about half of the city, right?
Yes.
Of New Haven.
Yes.
Now, New Haven, and what makes this very acute in New Haven, unlike, let's say, Columbia and Manhattan, is that New Haven is not a wealthy city. Mm. There's no real industry there.
Mm-hmm.
So Yale does pay pilots, which is payment in lieu of taxes, but it's much less than what they would normally pay if they were taxed. Much, much less.
Mm-hmm.
So what it means is people want a police department, trash pickup, they have to pay high taxes. Now, what also happens, if you want to open, let's say, a factory or a business, would you move to New Haven and pay higher taxes than in another city in Connecticut? Probably not.
Yeah.
So it can also drive business away.
Of course. It's great to have you explain this because it goes so far beyond. There are always rippling effects, always in life, in history,
right.
But it's great that you're here to explain that. I wonder, is there any more about, is this the same for the other Ivy Leagues? They are also not, of course, legally not required to pay taxes, but are they causing extra economic concerns on part of the cities in which they are located?
So each school is different. So I forgot in the list of eight to mention Dartmouth. Dartmouth is in a very rural area of New Hampshire. So there's eight Ivy League schools: Harvard, Yale, Brown, Dartmouth, Cornell, Columbia, Princeton, University of Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Dartmouth is in a rural area, so this isn't a huge issue there because they're in the middle of a forest, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But schools like University of Pennsylvania and Yale are both in urban areas that are quite poor. Mm-hmm. Philadelphia is the poorest big city in the U.S.
Yes.
So not paying taxes causes huge problems for the surrounding communities.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the thing is, it's all legal. But the question is it moral? But I'm not going to ask you to jump into that with me. But I'm just throwing it out there in general for our listeners. But why, for instance, with all of this money not exchanging hands, or exchanging hands at only the highest level, economic levels, I'm just wondering, is there any diversity? Is there any reaching out to, I know we've already established that very few get into these universities, and by large, the university's students that they do accept are members or descendants, children of the top 1% income bracket. But I'm wondering, are there some efforts being made to include racial, cultural, gender diversity? Because for the longest time, these universities were only for men, right?
Right. No, so we want to be clear. In the past few decades, these schools have opened up to women. My alma mater, Columbia, was the last one to start accepting women. That was in 1984. Until then, it was an all-male institution.
Mm-hmm.
they definitely want to be diverse.
Okay.
The issue is they have so few slots, it becomes, you know, this kind of puzzle piece, you know, that they're trying to put together to form a class.
Yes.
And so then it becomes, you know, they really need people from different groups. And I want to be clear, and we talk about this in the film, Exclusion U.
Yes.
The students from underprivileged backgrounds who go to these schools, if their parents make under a threshold, and the threshold I think right now is around $100,000, they do not pay tuition. They do not pay room and board in some cases. But the question the film asks is, are they being integrated onto campus life? And then the bigger question is, are we funding our state schools and other institutions adequately? Because these institutions get much more money and they have more resources than state schools. Mm. So sometimes for a poor student, it might be cheaper to attend the University of Pennsylvania than Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
University of Pennsylvania being private, Ivy, Penn State being public.
Yes.
So we have a very bizarre system in our country, and it's all legal, but it's all because these things just kind of were allowed to happen. And we maybe perhaps need to think about designing a system that's more equitable and fair and saying, hey, if you have a lot of money, that's great. You need to use it, or we're going to tax you. But you can't not use it and not be taxed.
Exactly. That's the point I'm trying to get at, and you stated it so well. You know, it's one or the other. You can't have it both ways. But here's the thing, as you alluded to, so much of what's going on or did go on prior to more inclusion in the Ivy League universities, it was established long before women were treated equally, long before any person of color was treated equally or even thought about. So it is a, forgive us, an American tradition, and it is dispersed throughout the culture. So it's not just these great educational institutions, but still they point out to us because they are supposed to be teaching the values for us to follow and learn and you know, and pass on, etc. And so it's good to put a focus on them as the people who guide the rest of the, what do I want to say, more than population, the rest of the culture, the rest of the evolution of where America is headed. I'm just saying that partly in defense, but not tremendously, because as you pointed out, everything that is going on is legal. My point is that I think it needs to be addressed as not moral. I think we are in so many areas of American life, we are living in our past. It was always done this way. It's far too simple a phrase to use in this case. But, you know, after all, these institutions, not just Ivy League universities, were established even before America was established. And it's always worked this way because it's worked this way because many of the people who established it, of course, were part of the establishment that controlled the power and the money, etc. And so my question is, how do we address this not only as an educational issue, a university issue, a higher education issue, but how do we address this for the overall, the larger community, the American society and culture in general? Let's go back. Let's start with diversity. We talked a bit about people of color and, of course, women. And my point is, we are talking about Ivy League universities that are not doing something that the larger society is also slow to do. How do we respond to that? How do we make both of them understand the need?
We take away their tax-free status.
Thank you.
We hold them accountable. We stop donating to them. I mean, that's the simplest way. And I think these schools, right now, there is a crisis in the state of higher education. These schools are a little removed from it, but a lot of people are questioning the value of higher education with the cost being so astronomical.
Yes.
And Richard V. Reeves in the film says something very good, which is the Ivies need to get ahead of this or they'll lose the faith of the American people.
Yes.
Because you can only raise tuition so much, you can only admit so few students until people begin to ask, well, is this really a scam of some sort? Which is why some people in the film said we could respond by having a lottery, you know, that if you are qualified, you enter, then it's a lottery, which would be more fair. And one person even said they could have a few seats to auction off to the highest bidder, which sounds awful, but it would be more transparent than what is now, where we don't know who paid to get in and who didn't.
Mm-hmm. And the reason there's so few seats available is...
So there's so few seats available because that makes it exclusive. And these schools were designed to be smaller institutions.
Mm.
The issue is, as their prestige and their marketing campaigns evolve, and now they no longer just recruit in the Northeast, but all over the world.
Yes.
And they actively are trying to get their applications and numbers up. This has created a problem because more people want to go to these schools. And we tend to pour more resources into these schools instead of making sure that more people have access to a high-quality education.
Now, since you mentioned high-quality education, one of the things that really fell on my ear in your documentary is that in some cases there are not full professors teaching the classes, but adjuncts. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, you did. So the Ivy League, like many schools, relies heavily on adjunct and grad students to teach their classes. Probably less so than other schools, but more than people think.
So you're not only paying a great deal if you're lucky enough to get in, but you might not get what you think you're paying for.
Exactly.
Wow. Well, your documentary is amazing. Exclusion U. So informative. And as I say, not many many guests leave me speechless, but you certainly do, and it's a tremendous, tremendous
Thank
documentary. Let me just remind people, it's Exclusion U, and its New York premiere will take place at Lincoln Center, Eleanor Monroe Film Center, on Thursday, June 8th. And, of course, on Friday, June 23rd, Exclusion U will be released on several platforms, on-demand platforms, including iTunes, Amazon, possibly Google Play. So look for it. We've been talking to its director, Ginger Gentile. This has been a most informative podcast today with our guest, Ginger Gentile, director of the amazing documentary film, Exclusion U. Remember, Exclusion U will be released on Friday, June 23rd, 2023, and will be available on various on-demand platforms, including iTunes, Amazon, and possibly Google Play. Ms. Gentile's New York premiere of Exclusion U takes place at Lincoln Center's Eleanor Monroe Film Center on Thursday, June 8, 2023. For more information on director Ginger Gentile and her documentary film, Exclusion U, visit her website at exclusionu.com. That's exclusionu.com. Or visit her on Instagram at exclusionufilm and on Facebook at exclusionu. And you can learn more also about all the other wonderful people who contributed to this amazing documentary film, Exclusion U. Produced by Veronica Nickel of Moonlight, Darvarian Baldwin in The Shadow of the Ivory Tower, Tressie McMillan, Cotton, Lower Ed, Anthony Jack, The Privileged Poor, Jeff Selingo, Who Gets In and Why, Dan Golden, The Price of Admission, Richard V. Reeves, Bookings Institution, Lauren Rivera, Northwestern University, Deja Fox, influencer, staffer for Vice President Kamala Harris, and others. Remember to see Exclusion U, the documentary film directed by our guest today, Ginger Gentile. It's been wonderful having you on the show, Ginger. Thank you so very much, and we wish you all the very best.
Thank you. I wish you the best, too. Thanks for having us on.
Thank you. Bye now. Hi, I'm Marcello Rolando. As promised, Rolando and Dresner Productions is creating a new musical to sow hope where there is uncertainty. It's about relationships and reconnecting. It's about, in every situation in life, making sense of it all, reconsidering all points of view. It's about reassembling our humanity and together making it all work out. Visit us on YouTube at Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice. But first, here's the song, It Will All Work Out by Larry Dresner.
My life was nice and cozy, with the sun around me. Then I felt a raindrop, and the skies were suddenly all cloudy. Now here I'm standing, in the rain, no umbrella. No overcoat, no money, sometimes forced to sing in a cappella. Before you lose your temper and your mind gets in a flurry, just tell yourself, no, honey, never cry and never, never worry. It'll all work out, it can't rain forever. It'll all work out somehow for the better if you just keep hanging on. There'll always be another chance to reach that brass ring. Soft and mellow, a big loud band comes marching, and the tuba fella starts to bellow. I don't know what to do now, everything's gone crazy. I don't know where to go now, 'cause my dream has gotten dim and hazy. Sometimes you're dealt a bad hand, but you keep on playing. I know you're not a quitter, listen now to what I'm saying. Chance to reach that brass ring. No matter what the weather, you can always sing and sing and sing and sing. It'll all work out. It can't rain forever. It'll all work out somehow for the better if you just keep hanging on.
For more information, listen to our Rolando and Dresner Productions podcast on YouTube at Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. How, what, and why we celebrate shapes memories and creates legacies. Celebrating memories of the greatest generation and silent generation, formulating Americans both through the Great War and the Great Depression, lessons most didn't learn until experiencing 21st century food deserts, overpopulation, or suddenly, violently rendered parentless. Legacies of America's imbalanced balancing act between our presumptive domestic demands and shrinking global supply, however, didn't make the cut when descendants of the greatest and silent generations learned the wrong lessons, like father knows best, believing everything you read in the papers, and sex exists for men and women only, to increase and multiply. I'd like to believe we've matured beyond such POVs, but have we? Not when continually celebrating myths, whitewashing memories, and building patriotic psychology on the shallow graves of crooked contingencies. Realizing post-Civil War generations were programmed with competing propaganda, we must confront the fallacy of personal historical comfort zones and unite to modernize our collective sense of balance between all life on Earth deviating from our home turf mirage. Unlike our 19th and 20th century national roots, we must wake up and smell the coffee before all the beans leave our mornings mourning over resume-embellishing over-caffeinated politicians betraying the votes of we the people for more cream and sugar. Perhaps we need to emulate salesman Willie Loman less and imitate his wife Linda more, sharing her character's raison d'etre. Attention must be paid. Our 2023 gun violence versus real, rather than self-righteous pro-life rhetoric deserting children after birth. Real love of life, requiring an American legacy that both questions leaders we empower and why pro-life freedom is more freedom-worthy than the liberty of pro-choice.
This gauntlet is not just for MAGA conservative Republicans and evangelical Christians imposing their beliefs, some violently, against abortions while turning the other cheek away from aging out. It's those who profit from AR-15 sales, which in a trigger-happy moment expose NRA's mockery of Second Amendment militia. Not all lies, violence, and mayhem started with our 45th president. Indeed, some financial institutions, corporations, and even some levels of government sense the future predicting glow of ATMs long before 9269, with the 1870 dawn's early light of the Second Industrial Revolution, arguably replacing blue-collar workers unable to transform rapidly into white-collar positions while producing more children to fill near-slave positions for corporate elites. Thus, a post-Lincoln America, full of self-importance, damning international reality, stumbled into World War I. Then, Nazi emulators, Dulles Brothers, twisted the Marshall Plan into the legacy of America's military-industrial complex. Here's where we started really ignoring ourselves to death. Bystanders watching the earth being raped repeatedly for coal, oil, gas, as if rehearsing 1945 Germans' alibi. We didn't know. Celebrating being deaf, dumb, and blind to the reality of January 6, 2021's congressional and judicial accomplices excuses the men behind the men who rent the men who shoot the guns to man up gun violence memories. Exactly. Into what legacy are MAGA-mega donors remodeling the GOP, and why? How are 35% of America's civilians and military convinced that destroying American democracy is the only way to fulfill America's dream? Why is the default position of conservative patriotism domestic violence? Why is the right's firewall burning books, fear-mongering indoctrination, and stand back and stand by supremacists? Who's fueling funded increase to resurrect life seen on black and white TV reruns? Why did fake Trump electors attempt to aid and abet the 2021 assassination of an American election, including America's core value, Lady Liberty's promise? However, it isn't just white-collar corporate board members, white supremacists, and corporate supremes of any color that need us to inject moral fiber, basic honesty, and judicial prudence to recreate mindfulness of our Ellis Island legacy. It's the mesmerized masses thinking themselves American citizens who have long abandoned the necessary character traits that parent such a claim. Civic duty like voting. Resurrected honor and rejuvenated justice for all in a colorblind country embracing the unity that delivered us through Valley Forge, Pearl Harbor, 9/11, and our current 6 January 2021 Fort Sumter inspiration. Remember, diversely united, we protect America's best hope by ignoring all repetitious media hyperbole, by only voting for politicians with proven records for favoring saving planet Earth from our over-consumerism, by using UBI to reduce the risk of AI transforming white-collar employees into blue-collar workers, as climate change tempo literally gains ground, while we're still denying some lives on Earth are already losing the race for all life on Earth, by rejecting the sins of the fathers, imparted excesses claiming we built that, and eliminating habits which are destroying our children's children's habitat, by remembering, while the greatest contributor to the declining health of Earth and Americans, we won't be alone in solutions the moment we let go of our overindulgences and welcome reason. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, and I know where my voice belongs. I wish the same for you. Thank you, and join us. Become one of the Reasonable Voices heard round the world.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.